home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour next Friday for Luke's birthday. They were eliminated on his birthday. They didn't hit the damn ball on his birthday, like Cedric Mullins exempted on that. The 11th is the big date next Friday. Come on out, get some pizza. When's the last time you were Pizza John's, you West Siders? I ain't never been to Essex. Well, you know, I'll bring you over to Thunder. We'll get a beer at Costas afterwards. I'll do the whole East Side tour for all y'all over there. Come on down, see us at Pizza John's. We'll have a good time on Tuesday or Friday afternoon celebrating birthdays. I got great guests coming by. Luke's gonna come by. I don't know what he's getting on his pizza. He's going to be powered up by our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare and Royal Farms, getting him down to Essex next week and Owings Mills. But one last clean out the lockers presser, and also sort of the season ending Mike Elias, Brandon Hyde. Where do we go from here? Luke, we've done a lot on the fans and on attendance. We'll continue to do that. I wrote a letter to David Rubenstein that thousands of people have already read. Thank you very much. Please share our work, share Luke's work, share that our tech service is alive and well at 410-821-9678, and better than ever. We're working hard here. And I would just say this. We talked attendance. I got my thoughts in on Rutschman and injuries and the disappointment and the air out of the balloon. Katie Griggs is going to get hers from me. Rubenstein's already got his from me. Off season, where's the money? Like all of that stuff. I grabbed a coffee from Royal Farms in between this last segment, and my wife said, "How's Luke holding up?" And I'm like, "Well, he's working like a dog in the Ravens in New York." I said, "We're not going to New York this weekend. We don't have to worry about what bar we're gonna." By the way, she said there's a Raven fan bar in Manhattan. She's right on 7th Avenue. I figured you and I'd be watching the Bengals there and having some fun and take you to Peter Luger's and you know have some fun. But I said Luke's cranky. They didn't hit the ball. They got some pitching. Luke's cranky. He wanted to go to like you know you were ready like you're pissed like you're like as a fan you're pissed as a media you're disappointed, perplexed maybe but not so much based on the last 90 days. But the body of work on the field, they had a chance to just they had the bases loaded, nobody out,
Yeah.
dude. They should have at least been playing on Thursday, man. Right? I mean, come on. I mean, it really was a piss poor performance over 18 innings and really over 10 games in a row. I mean, this is getting heavy on the fans, even and more so even than on Adley Rutschman or anybody who weren't here for Delmon Young. I mean, it's been a stretch.
Right. I mean, for these guys, for this core, it's five straight postseason losses, right? I mean, they
A
have
lot.
nothing to do with Delmon Young. They have nothing to do with Zach Britton being left in the bullpen and Ubaldo Jimenez giving up the home run to Encarnacion. But for a fan base, yeah, that's quite a burden for a fan base that hasn't gotten to experience much postseason in general over the last 40 years, you know, since the glory days of 66 through 83. That when you have those opportunities and you have a Delmon Young moment, and again, for what it was a great moment, but it was a division series moment, right? It wasn't a game three of the World Series or anything like that. When you've now gone through this and you're swept by Kansas City in the ALCS in 14, and you have the wild card game in 16, and then at that point, you know, you see the end of the Duquette Showalter era play out in such awful fashion in terms of how things just completely crashed and burned, really at the very end of September of 17, but certainly in 2018. I mean, they set a record number of losses in franchise history. But you go through the rebuild and Mike Elias and 1-1 picks and Rutschman and Gunner and everything that's happened to the point where, you know, things started to turn around in 22. And there was so much excitement at the end of that season, or, you know, probably, I don't want to say overwhelming excitement, but a lot of optimism, let's say. And then last year, things just came together the way they did. And things overall went so well last year until the Felix Bautista thing. And ever since, they played well in the first half of the season, but they dealt with injuries then. You go through this kind of a season, you kind of have the final week where Westbrook comes back, Coulomb comes back, Jacob Webb comes back, Ryan Mountcastle comes back, Heston Kerstad comes back, Grayson Rodriguez doesn't come back. You play well, take two or three from the Yankees in the Bronx, you sweep the Twins, who had completely fallen apart. And you're feeling, hey, this is right here. We're playing a team that was similarly underwhelming, if not just plain bad, in the month of September. I mean, again, the Royals didn't swing the bats at all. Go look at their offensive numbers in the month of September. So to just face plan again, that's why I said to you that post game clubhouse, there was more pain in this one than last year. Again, I think there was a sense last year, one, they had had such a great season. It was their first time. And the Royals or the Rangers just flat out beat their butts. The Royals didn't beat their butts in these two games. They lost 1-0 and 2-1. And that's where it's just excruciating. I mean, they had their chance. We talked about this in game one. We don't need to rehash game one. There's not that much to rehash. It's 1-0, right? I mean, again, you didn't lose 10-0 in these games. But game two, they get Cedric Mullins, who, by the way, Cedric Mullins, he had a nice series, right? And he's someone who was hurt and did nothing in last year's division series. So if you're looking for the tiniest example of someone rebounding from a bad postseason, I mean, Cedric Mullins did it. He had, two games. It's two games. I get it. But, he did a nice job, hit a home run, it ties it up. For the people who were in the ballpark, it got loud, right? I mean, it wasn't a terrible atmosphere in terms of the fans wanting to have something to cheer about. The Orioles didn't give them anything to cheer about. But they load the bases, nobody out. You're saying, okay, here's their chance. They're going to take the lead. And then at that point, the question was going to become what had become a bullpen game because they pulled Zeflin after, or Zeflin. I just put his first and last name together. Zach Eflin, after, twice through the order, they pulled him at that point, as I told you they might do, with anyone not named Corbin Burns. And they went through the bullpen. And at that point, my question was, okay, are these guys going to do it? Because I've been the one that's been doubting the pen. Well, in the midst of thinking about that and pondering that, Santander pops up. Colton Cowser strikes out. Adley Rutschman grounds out, which included taking what, a 2-0 fastball right down the pipe. I mean, I know fans are mad, and I am not at all suggesting that Brandon Hyde is beyond reproach or beyond any criticism or beyond any questioning of this move or that move. I mean, could they have walked Rutschman and left C&L Perez in to face Pasquantino rather than bringing in Cano to face Bobby Witt Jr.? Or I think I said walk Rutschman, walk Witt. I'm sorry. Not much sleep the last few days. Point is, what happened this in the sixth inning? You could question the strategy. You could question which way direction they go there, but to sit here and just want to execute the manager when your 3-4-5 hitters do that with the bases loaded and nobody out. I mean, at some point in time, you got to put something on the players, right? And in this social media age, and I don't mean this exclusively to the Orioles and the Ravens, because me having a brother-in-law who's a diehard Philadelphia sports fan, I see enough Philadelphia sports media as well. We have such a tendency that, and it feels like it's only getting worse, that when teams win and succeed, it's all about the players. The players, the players, the players, the players did it. When teams lose, it's all about the coaching. The coaches stink. The manager's dumb. The offensive coordinator sucks. What? And there's just, we've lost our ability to have any nuance and look at this. So,
Well, everybody's George Steinbrenner, right? That was the George Steinbrenner thing. I mean, let's kill management. That's not the Steve Bisciotti thing. The Steve
And
Bisciotti thing is that, we're going to let them sit here and hang out for the rest of their lives. I mean, there's an in between, and I don't know where Mr. Rubenstein
sure.
is. And I wrote a note to him, and this is all new and fresh. But if Mr. Rubenstein, this there is new ownership, right? So if new
There
ownership wants
is.
to
And
come in and do, certainly in places that needed to be fumigated, like Washington, where they now have a quarterback, and I promise you they have a coach there. Dan Quinn's a good man. I know Dan Quinn. You know what I mean? So like I you look at that and say, well, there's a new thing. Magic Johnson and the drunk owner on ESPN the opening night, like all that. But there is new everything here. Everything, Katie Griggs, everything's getting evaluated. To me, I've seen baseball operations here since Hank Peters and Earl Weaver and the Oriole Way and Harry Dalton, and I'll go through all of it. Rolly Heeman, I knew, Melvin, Frank, like just take them all the way. Mike Flanagan, Beattie, all these guys. That's not the part of the thing that's broken. Mike Elias and Brandon Hyde and Sig Meidel are not broken. Adley Rutschman's not broken. I mean, like, don't
Hopefully
mix
not.
the problems. Don't mix the pro. Well, Colton Cowser's broken, but don't mix the problems with the result. You know what I mean? Like, I have a problem with
Well,
that on a process level to say the body of work. You know what I mean? The body of work is stop with this fire Brandon Hyde nonsense. I mean, come on, you. When people say that, you know what it tells me? It tells me you're an ignorant fan. I mean, it really. I mean, in the hours after that, it tells me you're the fan that I ran away from phone calls from, that I run away from Twitter. I shake my head. I smack. Like I see it on my Facebook page. I see. You know, like I get it, and I can't. At 56, I can't deal with nonsense. Like, come on, man. You know, yeah, there are issues, but the issues aren't broken leadership or that the manager did a poor job. He was manager of the year back in June when he had pitching and he had a healthy catcher and he had Westberg coming into his own. And I mean, look, you can beat him up at that holiday in Mayo, not making it. If you want to, like, I'll beat Elias up for not doing enough for the bullpen. And I'll hear you on the trades. Come on, man. He's a pretty stand
There's
up
work to be
guy.
done.
No, but if you ask him right now, how did he do with the trading deadline? He'd make some excuses for Rodgers in the future and whatever. He'd probably say C minus. I failed us. Like maybe C plus because Eflin got to the hill and gave him maybe B minus because Eflin got to the hill. Got to gave him a game two. You know what I mean? I don't know, but I'm trying to evaluate that body of work based on the two
Sure.
games we saw. And I'm not going to beat Brandon Hyde up. That's all.
Yeah, and look, like I said, you can question moves. I mean, they could have walked Witt and Perez faces Pascantino, who hadn't played, had played two games in a month, right? So my general point was, when I look back to the series, they scored one run. I mean, okay, if you want to fire the hitting coaches and you want to start firing people left and right and all that, okay, but then I don't trust your ability to replace necessary. If you're going to be that rash, that hasty, that over the top in reacting about it, then those same people that are making those decisions, I'm also going to doubt their ability to get people that are going to be better. Because again, this offense worked very well for the first half of the season. Some of the injuries, and but what I said, you do need to look at your process. They do need to be better situationally. There are, even though you would look at this and say, well, Gunnar Henderson, I mean, he was MVP of the league the first 2 months of the season. This guy was, a top 5 to 10 player in Major League in the American League this year, right? Colton Cowser, maddening as it might be that he's inconsistent, think about how we view him now compared to a year ago when he wasn't even on the postseason roster. Jordan Westberg became an all-star player who got hurt. The one guy that you look at is Adley Rutschman, and you and I have both established that there's very compelling evidence to suggest that he's hurt. And maybe we'll find out something definitive today, tomorrow, next week, or maybe it won't be until spring training. But I think you have to very much consider that because, again, this guy went from all-star to the profile of a replacement level player in Major League Baseball, right? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. That's not a slump. That's what the heck is going on? Like, what's wrong with his health? What's wrong with, did he get hurt? Like all that.
To
So,
your point, why is he playing if he can't
so
play at
that,
that level? And
so,
we did a half an hour on that. So,
right,
yeah.
exactly. So that, but at the same time, and this is where I am going to get a little step outside my comfort zone a little bit here as I try to analyze things. You do have to look at this and say, why have you gone 0 for back-to-back postseasons? We're not talking about like the Ravens, for example, who were a Zay Flowers fumble across the goal line from maybe having a chance to knock off the Chiefs. As much as everyone was frustrated, they did get to that moment. I mean, this team hasn't, they haven't lined up to shake hands in a postseason game yet in five tries.
Dude, they
So
struck out with the bases loaded and nobody out to end their
you
season,
have,
like literally, right?
so,
Like,
right. So
you
you
get
do
the
have to
bases
look at
loaded and
that.
nobody out. That's the best scenario you can have in life. You got to squeeze something out of that. And if you don't, the next day you clean your locker out and you just say, we didn't perform, when the lights were bright.
So you do have to look at that. And, let me use some local sports memories and examples, does this team need its Frank Robinson? And what I mean by that is I'm not necessarily saying you're going to bring in someone who's going to hit, what, 586 career home runs and be a Hall of Famer and one of the, top 20 players in the history of the game. But Jim Palmer to this day has talked about, we were a pretty good team, and you could go and look at the Orioles from about 1960 on. They had some good teams. And, in 64, really good team. 61, I mean, they're stuck behind the Yankees. I mean, Jim Gentile had an amazing year, but is Mantle and Maris. But they got to 66 or the winter of 65, and they said, Jim Palmer said, Frank Robinson was brought in. We make the trade. He taught us how to win. Do they need a Frank Robinson? Do they need a Shannon Sharpe and a Rod Woodson to add to this mix? And look, it's October 3rd as you and I are sitting here having this conversation. I don't know who that
By the
player is off
way,
the top of my head right
25
now.
years later, you just said something that I don't, because I know both of those guys real well, and I don't think they're, I know they're special and like all that, but 25 years later, think about that, man. And throw Goose in there and throw, whatever the heart transplant. But I was in Marvin's office. He's like, we're going to bring Rod Woodson in here. And that was in 90, he was here 2 years before they won. We're going to bring Rod Woodson here and make him a safety. And I'm like, you're going to what? To do what? Like, no, Rod's going to change things. Leadership's going to change things around here. And then, Ray had his issues and Shannon Sharpe, and Shannon was here 5 minutes. All they did was win, win, win. You know what I mean? Like, so, but that's a hell of a point you're making that I don't think
I mean,
I've ever heard you make it or me make it about what
do they
that
need a grown
means.
up? Do they need a grown up? And look, I don't say that to be disparaging to the veterans that they have had here. I mean, Aaron Hicks did a nice job for them last year, right? And I mean, obviously the Yankees paid him money to go away. I mean, that's how bad things were for him at the end in New York. But he had been on some winning teams. Now, let's be clear, the Yankees of the last 15 years are not the Yankees that we talked about in the 90s and 2000s that were winning pennants and World Series on the regular, right? So that's why I even said trying to stack up this postseason field. I wasn't viewing the Yankees as anything more special than the Orioles because why? They haven't won anything in a long time. None of those guys have won anything that they have right now. But that's where I look at this thing and say, is there a player? And I don't know who that is right now. And I don't know if it'd be a trade. I don't know if it'd be free agency, right? Free
See, they
agency
may
would
have
be
thought James
preferable because
McCann is that kind of guy, but not enough
it's
of a
got to be someone
player.
more. It's got to be, right.
It's
It's got to
got
be
to
a higher
be,
profile.
yeah,
It's got to be a
yeah.
starter. It's got to be a starter at least. Doesn't have to be your best player, but it's got to be a starter. And again, I'm looking at this. I'm
I think
spitballing
they're
because I've
thinking
said
Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson are that when they're right, that that's what they're
that's not
going to
what I'm
be when they
talking about
grow
here,
up.
though. That's not what I'm talking about here, though. Frank Robinson came in and was this guy who'd been MVP. And look, the Orioles had Brooks. The Orioles had Boog Powell. The Orioles had homegrown players. And they brought in someone who taught them how to win. And I'm not saying it needs to be that dramatic here, right? I'm not saying that the Orioles are, first of all, they're not going to go out and sign Juan Soto, for example.
How about this? I'll use you an
But
example. How about a Kevin Millar kind of guy, of that era? I'll give
sure.
you a guy that they pissed away, and this would speak to the old man, and it, Nelson Cruz. And Nelson Cruz was a guy that they completely screwed up. Adam
Had
Jones.
played in a
You know what
World
I mean?
Series.
Like they had dudes here. Markakis. They let a lot of good humans walk. Way after Messina in that era. I'm talking about just that. 12 to 14 to 16, people Buck wanted around that Buck felt like were Buck guys and leadership Buck guys and pile diver Buck guys. Buck had a sense about all that. And all that being said, Buck never climbed the mountain, but I'd still go to war with Buck. I mean, if all they get, if they don't win a World Series here and they get 3 or 4 more years out of these, and they're gonna, I mean, look. Henderson, Rutt, forget our
They
feelings
still have a lot
today.
of good
These are going
players,
to be the guys in the lineup next year. Couser's hand's going to be fixed. Westberg's going to come back a year more pissed off and a year more, Texas tough. And Westberg might be that guy. Like I keep thinking you want to import Hart. That's like when the Ravens went and got Earl Thomas to fix things or Roquan Smith. I mean, they had to import Roquan Smith is exactly what you're talking about for the Ravens 2 years ago to say Patrick Queen. Marlon Humphrey, leader, stop. We need, and I've said that about Lamar, having a grown up around. I mean, maybe King Emery's that guy. I felt that way about Mark Ingram a couple of years ago. So we could use the football baseball side of this to say, I mean, you brought up Shannon Sharpe and Rod Woodson, and like, I mean, like, that's why you're the best at what you do. I'll kiss your ass right now because I haven't thought about that in 25 years of comparing that to Frank Robinson. I
I
wrote a book
mean,
on it. I wrote two books on it, and I don't think I ever used that. That's some deep ish you came up with this morning, Lucas, for your birthday. You're a year wiser. Comparing Shannon Sharpe and Rod Woodson, that's great because they had great
I mean,
players.
this, but this is why I'm spitballing here, because I don't want to be the guy that overreacts to two games or three games. Now, this year, like I said, my greater point has been it wasn't 2 games, it was 2 months, right? I mean, I could have just copy and pasted my game one column for reflecting on game two, because I said the October Orioles look too much like the second half Orioles, and it's kind of what we saw, right? But you know, that's where I look at that and say, look, they've got so much talent, and these are not like, I don't think that they were good players and now suddenly I think they're bad players, right? I think there's a lot of tendency to feel that way. I can think of how many people over the years, you know, even good old school baseball people who completely, you know, whatted all over the Oakland A's for their process of Moneyball and the fact that they'd win 100 games in the regular season and then they couldn't win a playoff series. And I think there was more nuance than that, right? I think there's always an in between, right? And that's where I look at this and say, I do think the Orioles need to take a long look at some of their process and how they evaluate and how they teach, and something about their hitting that just broke in the second half of the season beyond some health problems that absolutely factored into that. So I look at that and say, what do I do? That doesn't mean I start trading guys left and right or cutting guys left and right. No, but is there a way to supplement what you have with maybe an established right-handed bat who might also have some leadership qualities, or maybe won a World Series 5 years ago or 8 years ago, that might be that for you? And that doesn't mean that's the end all be all either. Let's be clear. There is no such thing as that in baseball. There is no franchise quarterback, because you have to wait your turn. The other eight guys have to bat. The other four starters have to take their turn in the rotation. So you don't have that franchise quarterback, or LeBron James is can touch the ball every time down the floor if he wants to. So, you know, but is there something like that that they need to look at? I mean, they absolutely need to add a right-handed bat, I think. As much as, yeah, Jordan Westberg's going to take the next step, and I love him as a player, as much as, you know, you still might believe in Kobe Mayo. And not might, should believe in Kobe Mayo. I mean, that's such a small sample that it would be hasty to suddenly say, well, but that said, are you putting all your eggs in that basket? Do you need to start hedging your bets a little bit here? And I'll use Kansas City as a great example without trying to use hyperbole, because the Royals won 86 games. They weren't a juggernaut this year, let's be clear. But go look at their offseason. They added Seth Lugo. They added Michael Wacha. They added some veteran position players and, you know, guys that are role players and things of that nature, but they had a young
But to
core
your point,
anchored
better
by
than
Bobby
Kyle
Witt,
Gibson,
who's one of the
right? What they added.
I mean, but Kyle Gibson was along the right. I mean, I guess. I mean, my point here is they had a young core, but they, to me, they recognize, hey, we love Cole Ragans, but let's not make it out to be that he has to be the undisputed ace, even though he still was the ace. But we're going to add Seth Lugo and we're going to add Michael Wacha, and these guys are end up being really good. I mean, Seth Lugo was an all-star, right? I mean, Michael Wacha was an above average starting pitcher this year, and we're going to see how they fare against the Yankees in the division series. But I guess, you know, the overall point here, and the Orioles have done some of this, but to your point, Kyle Gibson, and obviously they brought in Corbin Burnes to be the ace, right? I mean, that wasn't as much about leadership as much as you just wanted an ace and you had an opportunity to bring in an ace, but
Well, the other
you like
part
the
is their pitching
leadership that it
sucks, and
brings along the way.
they don't draft
But
pitchers, so they're going to have to buy pitchers.
their pitching doesn't suck. Amazingly, go look at their numbers this year and compare them to last year when they had a healthy Kyle Bradish all year, and they had a healthier, you know, at least in the second half, Grayson Rodriguez. And their pitching doesn't suck. I mean, that's the wrong word to use. Pitching certainly was injured this year. They could certainly augment. They could certainly add. They're going to have to, assuming Corbin Burnes walks out the door. Their bullpen's going to be in way better shape if Felix Bautista is healthy. But I'd still look at that. I think you still need to look at another starter, right? But it doesn't stink.
No.
But
Let me clarify that. Their system
okay,
I'm
go
talking
ahead.
about. I'm talking about their system
Oh.
and the way they draft. The let in the Elias era, I'll give you the quiz. In the Elias era, every player that you've ever named when you come on, and I'm going back to 2019-20, was, I mean, the obvious were the 1-1s. I mean, the Kausers and the Rutschmans and the Hendersons that were on a faster
Right.
track and they were younger, and Bisaccia and Westberg and Mayo and Holiday. There was Grayson Rodriguez, and that's it. Maybe Keegan Aiken for a minute or three, right? Like,
They acquired Kyle Bradish as a prospect, though.
fair enough. Okay, fair enough.
So, their
But what's
pitching
next, I
development's
guess, is what I'm saying. That they've
sure.
been way, way more about
Sure.
touting
I mean,
position
that's been their
players.
emphasis. Yeah. Yeah,
Correct.
yeah.
So then they have to go buy Zach Eflin if they want anything at the top of the rotation. Because I'm looking at McDermott and Povich now and saying, I don't think those kids are ever going to be ones or twos. I think they may have thought Kramer. I mean, Kramer came in the Machado deal. I mean, like
Okay,
Kramer's been
but he they still had to develop him. Like, I understand they're not drafting, but they've
developing him
also,
to getting to be a four or a five, not to be
which
Corbin
you need,
Burns. Okay,
you
fair enough.
still, but you need that. Like, we can't just talk about it in terms of Corbin. Okay, Corbin Burns pitches game one. You still have game two, three, and four. You still have four other spots in the rotation. So I hear what you're saying. We're getting a little too far into
I'm
the
talking about
weeds on that
all-star
specific.
talent, the kind of talent that you need to win a three-game series where, to your point, the Royals had a dude, they went and signed another dude, they were ready to come back with another decent guy in three, and we have to be ready for that. And the Orioles have had to run over glass to make that happen once Bradish's arm fell apart, Means' arms fell apart. Like, all the guys they had in line, I consider Elias a miracle worker for getting two starters to the mound in game one and two in this organization, paying him over $40 million, trading Ortiz, and at the deadline, taking on the money for next year that Angelos never would have done in 30 years, not 30, but the last 20 years never would have done, and got them a one run and a two run ball game in the playoffs in the wild card. Did everything they needed to do pitching wise and did hit the ball.
Yeah, and look, when I brought up I wasn't necessarily talking about veteran pitchers. I was talking about veterans in general. That's really the point I'm trying to make here. That I think, and I talked about this a lot. I mentioned this in our previous segment, so I'll give this a couple minutes here. But I really felt the Orioles this year, and I mean, we talked about this back in spring training. This wasn't something that I was shocked by, but you had Hayes, Mullins, Mountcastle, that group of, kind of the first wave of the new guys, right? I mean, Mullins made his debut when Adam Jones was still here, right? Mountcastle came in. Austin Hayes made his debut late in 17, because he had kind of blown his way through the system in such impressive fashion. So you had these guys, and they got you to this point. They were the ones who took all the bullets for all the lousy teams. I mean, they were the few guys that you could actually watch back in 2019 and 20 and 21 and say, okay, man, this guy, this guy, this guy, that guy over there, that guy. I don't even know who that guy is. Those guys are unwatchable. But, Hayes is good. I mean, he's a little inconsistent, but he's good. Cedric Mullins, I mean, my goodness, he had a 30-30 year in 21. And Mountcastle, did what he did. And Santander, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention him, the guy that was a Rule 5 pick for Dan Duquette and how he developed. So you had that wave that got the Orioles to the point where they were in 22 and last year. And we started talking about that. I started talking about that this spring. I wrote about the outfield, right? I mean, the outfield was the really interesting, kind of inflection point where Santander was entering a contract year, Hayes was entering the next to last year of arbitration. Mullins, same thing for him. You had Colton Cowser, who it kind of felt like he had done everything he could at Norfolk. So it's like, what do you do with him? Same with Heston Kerstad. At that point, they still had Kyle Stowers in the system. And we kind of looked at this and said, okay, how's this going to go? Because I don't know if it's the right approach to just say, okay, well, the vets are just going to play out their contracts or their club control, and then you just hand jobs to the young guys. So there's always that awkward And we talked about this a little bit a couple months ago. I'm not at all suggesting there was division over this or anything like that, but there's just competition, right? And I think there was always that, how do you transition from the old guard? And I say old in quotes because they're not old, but guys in their late 20s at this point, compared to all these guys that they had, drafted and developed. So there was always kind of that awkward phase there. And I think if Mike Elias made a misstep as it pertains to that, it's maybe needing to have someone that ready to bridge the gap if someone struggles, if the younger guys aren't quite ready. And I think, you kind of look at it right now. That's why I've said like a right-handed bat. In a perfect world, Kobe Mayo would have come up in August when they had a time of need, and Kobe Mayo would have absolutely raked. And we might be having a different conversation right now. And that's not to say he won't be really good next year, even. But when you rely on young players, I've said this to you over and over, and I'm going to cite it again. And I've been a broken record for anyone who's listened to us regularly about this. It's not all linear. This all doesn't go perfectly. And I'll again cite to you the Houston Astros in 2015. They were a wild card. They won the wild card game. They took the Kansas City Royals, who won the World Series that October, to five games in the divisional round and the division series. So they look like, oh my gosh, the Astros are about to take off. You know what they did the next year? They went 84 and 78 and missed the playoffs entirely. Yeah. Hey, go back and look. I don't know all the. I'm not intimate with all the details of the 2016 Astros, but the point was they looked like a team that was ready to explode after 15, and that didn't happen. You know what happened the year after that? Trash cans aside, they'll save that for another day. I know you like to call them the Cheatstros. They won the World Series and won 101 games that year. So I'm not suggesting that means the Orioles are guaranteed and destined to win the World Series next year, but you got to remember. All this stuff, as much as it feels like, okay, incremental improvement, and you won 90 games this year and then 95 the year after that, and then you're ready to win the World Series after that, and then you're ready to repeat and win 107 games. Doesn't work like that. It rarely works like that. So that's where I do look at this and say, okay, you look at the types of moves the Astros made. They brought in Justin Verlander at the trade deadline, and we kind of used the Corbin Burns comparison there, right? Back in February. They added someone like a Carlos Beltran. And again, I know there's a cheating element to this and the trash cans and all that, but just trying to look at it for what it was, because that was, no one would deny that was an immensely talented team, regardless of whether it was on the up and up entirely or not, which it wasn't. But do they need a Carlos Beltran type move in terms of like adding someone like that to their lineup, adding someone? I mean, I look at some of these guys and I just say, I mean, we talked about this with Austin Hayes, Ryan Mountcastle, and I'm not talking about the wrist specifically at the present, over the last month of the season, but look at his numbers the last 3 or 4 years. Offensively, he kind of peaked early in his career. He's kind of, if anything, just tried to match that. He's fallen back a little bit in terms of like OPS. I mean, he doesn't draw walks. If you want my honest opinion on Ryan Mountcastle, and look, I love the guy. He's a good dude. I even saw I saw someone took a photo. It was 2 hours after the game last on Wednesday night after they had just gotten eliminated. He got out of his car and signed autographs for the handful of fans who were just there. He's a good dude. Do I think he's a everyday first baseman for a really great lineup or a lineup that wants to be great and wants to be a World Series team, especially as he's getting more expensive in arbitration now? I don't know if he's that player. I almost feel, and I this sounds really backhanded, and I don't mean to make it sound that way because he's a major league player. I think he's more of a starting first baseman for a second division team, if you want. I feel like the Orioles, if they want to grow and improve their offense, he's someone I feel like that's a spot they need to upgrade, right? And maybe Kobe Mayo is going to be that guy. But
They need a Glenn Davis type.
And I'm just, and let me be clear, I'm using that as an example here because this is not, just like I've talked about with Corbin Burns, like it's not Corbin Burns or bust. It's okay, if you don't, if Corbin Burns walks out the door, what are you doing? There are lots of different things you can do. I mean, And I mentioned the Royals. They signed Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha, and that worked out really well for them. Nathan Eovaldi and Jordan Montgomery won the Rangers a World Series last year. I mean, these weren't $200 million contracts. There are ways to do this, but you've got to have your wherewithal to recognize and project and have the good models to say, hey, this guy's going to be really good for this year and next. Let's give him a 3-year deal that isn't going to be Corbin Burns money, but it's real money. I mean, Zach Eflin's making real money in 25, and I think they feel good about where Zach Eflin is going to be for them. And he's going to be a top half of the rotation guy for them, if not their opening day starter when it's all said and done.
And
Not
you feel
knowing.
like you're going to get 32 starts and you're going to get
Yeah,
184 innings and
that's a
you feel
really
like
high floor.
you're going to be a 3.6 ERA and that's what you're going to be okay
That's a
with
high
that, right?
floor. Yeah. I mean, is it Corbin Burns? No. But again, you kind of look at this and say, there are many ways to do this. There are many ways to approach this. And I was just using Mountcastle as an example there. You know, is there a right-handed bat in some shape or form, whether it's a first baseman or someone who DHs and plays the outfield some, whatever, you know, someone like Nelson Cruz a decade ago. You know, how about that? You know, as you mentioned Nelson Cruz a few minutes ago. You know, is there a move out there to be made that could give you something like that where you need another right-handed bat and maybe has a little bit of pedigree that these young guys could benefit from a little bit more? I don't know. Again, this is so raw. It's so frustrating. No one wants to be 0-5 in 2 years in the postseason. I mean, it's embarrassing, quite frankly. I mean, this was a face plant,
Well,
but at the
that's the
same
whole thing
time,
about the organization that I'll get into
yeah,
about how the
with
players
ownership, sure.
they need to be marketing the team. The players are
This
embarrassed. The
hurts.
players are hurt. Like, does Adley Rutschman want to go show his face the next 3 months? Do any of these guys want to show their faces? They're gonna take egg in their face when Burns signs for $194 million somewhere because that's probably I mean they're like Santander. They probably don't want him. The people they don't want to let them walk. Whatever. It's tough. The offseason's up. I want a break. Luke is here. He's Baltimore Luke. We'll get back together. It's his birthday. I'm letting him towel off, letting him get all that frustration out. That you're an old guy now, man. I mean, you keep getting up more birthdays. So I got to take you out, get some pizza. Next Friday, the 11th, we're going to be celebrating both of our birthdays. I'm getting a year older, too, but I'm going to shave and look sexy, let my hair out. On the 11th, we'll be at Pizza John's in Essex. Dundalk guys don't go to Essex for much, but we go for pizza. I promise you. We're going to be down at Back River Neck Road. Our friends at also at Jiffy Lube MultiCare take us out on the road. Luke's going to be doing a lot with the football team. He'll be out in Owings Mills. I am doing a lot with oysters. Did 26 oysters in 26 days for the Oyster Recovery Partnership. I haven't put a word up on the website about it because we're kind of saving it now. Like, it was like stuff was going on in September and things happened on the field, off the field, the Orioles, all that stuff. It's all brought to you by friends at Curio Wellness and Foreign Daughters, as well as our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions. Somewhere around here, I have a bottle of, my cat and I were drinking this. Liberty Pure Solutions, 1-800 clean water. It's so clean, I feed my cat the water. Doug Workman and his folks do a great job with well water, and they're also just great plumbers, man. I mean, I had a plumbing issue. I had a drain leak thing going on, corrosion. They came out hour later, boom, I got fresh water. So our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, as well as Curio Wellness and Foreign Daughter, and Wendy joined us this week to talk about Maritime Magic and the Living Classrooms Foundation big event on Friday night. Maybe I'll meet Mr. Rubenstein or Ms. Griggs there. There is a letter to David Rubenstein that is extensive and a long time coming. I said I was going to write it once. I was mistreated in May and sat around in June and July and August and September. I was rejected for playoff credentials throughout, even the World Series that they didn't get to. I have a rejection note for, is that like a phantom ticket? Maybe it is. I'm not sure for my collectors out there. Lots of things to it. Speaking of collectors out there, please get a look at the video if you get anything or the time for the Capital Center retrospective that we did on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour last week at Costas. It was just good fun. So I know it's tough right now. We've got football games. We're good. Man, the Cincinnati thing feels distant, and we're like, ooh, kickoff's on Sunday, 1 o'clock. Let's get it going. So Crab Cake Tour's next Friday. Luke and I are hanging out. I'm giving Luke some oxygen because he's been at it. We thought we were headed to New York this weekend. Instead, we're headed to dear David Rubenstein and the offseason and management. I want to talk about shorter strokes and hitting home runs and Joe Flacco and a whole bunch of other things we get back in. Luke and I are going to continue on one more segment on baseball as we clean out the lockers, as they say, down at Camden Yards. We're talking baseball. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.